Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
Nearly 60 years ago, he delivered his iconic I Have a Dream speech in Washington, D.C. But well before Dr. King delivered that speech, he practiced it and crafted it here in Miami at the historic Hampton House. The Miami Hotel in the city's Brownsville neighborhood had visitors like Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, and some of the era's most iconic African-American civil rights leaders during Miami's segregated era. We spoke with Dr. Enid Pinckney, the president and CEO of the Hampton House, about Dr. King's legacy in Miami and his involvement in the desegregation movement.
To assemble, because it was just gorgeous. It was beautiful. It was elegant. It had class. And people wanted to be in that setting. They loved it. Dr. Martin Luther King had a favorite room there, so did Muhammad Ali. Malcolm X was there. Nancy Wilson. All of the celebrities that came to Miami, they could not stay in a white hotel. So they wanted to feel comfortable, and they wanted to feel safe, and they wanted to feel good. So the Hampton House provided that for them, and they just loved it. The Hampton House had a swimming pool, and it had good food, and it was just a place where people loved to be.
And you talk about it, you say it was beautiful. How would you describe, because, you know, when I look at photos, I see a lot of black and white photos, but how would you describe, what was that ambiance like? What did it look like?
Well, for instance, the cafe, the paintings on the wall, the wallpaper, the colors, the color scheme was beautiful. The lobby with the gold desk, and it was just a place that you just felt good being there.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. started coming down to South Florida in the 1950s. It's interesting to note that much of his trips down here were done in secret, in part for his protection. Who were some of his confidants here in Miami, the people that were closest to him?
Well, Dr. John O. Brown, A.D. Moore, was an officer in CORE organization, the Congress for Racial Equality, CORE.
Okay.
And A.D. Moore, Talmadge Fair, some of the leaders who in the community at that time, most of them are dead now. Dr. Brown's dead. A.D. Moore is dead. And they were a part of CORE. And the Markowitz, which was a Jewish couple that owned the Hampton House, permitted CORE to have regular meetings there at the Hampton House. And so Dr. Martin Luther King came to some of those meetings.
Talk to us a little bit about CORE, as you said, the Congress of Racial Equality.
What they did when they were in Miami, they planned strategies for desegregation. They planned how they would go downtown and sit, for instance, at a lunch counter, or how they would ride and sit in the front of the bus. And one of the things that Dr. Martin Luther King stressed was nonviolence, because many people felt that, you know, to disobey the law would put you in danger with the police, and how the police would treat you if you sat at a counter. And then some people said they didn't know if they could take the violence from the police He's teaching nonviolence, but what about the violence from the police? And should you just accept that?
What was the movement like here in South Florida? So much of the attention was in the Deep South, but what was going on here in South Florida, in Miami?
Well, it was a little different here because the white people who were in power were also concerned about the image of Miami. And they would sit down and talk with black people to try to prevent some of the things from happening that happened in other parts of the country, in other parts of the South. For instance, I'll give you an example. When black people decided that they wanted to go to the beach because there was no place in Miami where black people could go to the beach. And when they were led by Attorney Thomas, Ellie Thomas, who took money with him to Hallover Beach, when they went to Hallover Beach to go into the water, and he just knew they were going to be arrested for violating the law. But they were not. And then he had a conference, I think it was with the sheriff and the powers that be, to get a beach for the black people, which was Virginia Key Beach.
So that's when the conversation started about having a beach, a separate beach.
A separate beach, yeah, for black people.
Dr. King crafted his I Have a Dream speech at the Hampton House, and he even practiced it for a small audience. What do we know about how that speech was received? And because, I mean, you think about it, that's where he was practicing. How has that shaped the history of the Hampton House?
You know, A.D. Moore, who I heard say this, he too is now deceased. But he said he was sitting right there next to Dr. King. And when he gave that speech, he said he just felt all kinds of thrills going up and down his spine.
Because this is the famous Dr. King speech. He's practicing it here in South Florida before he gives it to the nation.
Right. And he said that was a speech that was thunderous. It was magnificent. I could see him telling us about it because he was present when it took place. And he said that just touched everybody in the room.
And that, of course, I mean, that just builds that allure and that history for the Hampton House, because that's where it started.
That's right. That's right.
I'm talking with Dr. Enid C. Pinckney. She is the president and CEO of the historic Hampton House, legendary Miami hotel where a number of iconic African-American athletes and civil rights leaders and other celebrities stayed during the era of segregated Miami, one of those being Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We're reflecting on King's legacy here in South Florida and the significance of the community space. Just 2 years prior to Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination, he delivered the speech at the historic Hampton House, establishing the creation of the local chapter of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and he spoke about the need for blacks in Miami's new Cuban population to work together and not combat for their place in the job market, and here's a piece of that.
Admittedly, the social dilemma in Miami is unique in that it has both Negro and Cuban refugees flooding the job market, seeking the same menial, low-paying jobs. But it would be cruel and indeed inhuman for the power structure to pit these two ethnic groups against one another in competition for mere survival, thereby creating explosive tensions that might one day become a blight upon this lovely community.
What can you tell us about what was happening at that time, the relationship between the Cuban community and the black community? What was it like?
Well, the Cubans were coming to Miami at that time, and they were coming in large numbers. And I think that Dr. King was prophetic in that statement. It's good that that was recorded, because a lot of what he said actually came true. I feel that it's true that because the job market is so slim, and it's so hard for many, especially young Black people, to get jobs. And now, when they have to know Spanish or another language, that puts another burden on them. So I feel that he was prophetic in his statement and seeing what would eventually probably happen in the community.
And after that, did things change? Did things get better?
Well, I think we are still trying to deal with that situation. I think we're
all
still,
these years later.
All these years later, I think it's still something that needs to be addressed.
It's important to note that Dr. King never led a protest down the streets of Miami. This city isn't seen as critical in the battleground in Dr. King's legacy, like Washington, D.C. or Montgomery, Alabama. But Dr. King came down here, and he was still working on ideas. And obviously, as we said, he was working on his very famous speech. Was coming to Miami almost like maybe a little bit of an escape?
I think that Miami was an escape because he could relax. He could come to Miami. He could come to the Hampton House and relax. And you see, I understand what some of the things that happened, for instance, in Alabama, because I went to school. I graduated from Talladega College in Talladega, Alabama. And I was a member of the YWCA when they had a conference, a state conference in Alabama, and there was no place that we could go where white people and Black people could be in the same room. And I remember we went to Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, where there was a Reverend Johns, who was the pastor of that church before Dr. Martin Luther King became the pastor. And this Reverend Johns, he like paved the way for Dr. Martin Luther King, because he worked with the people to try to help have them have courage to stand up for their rights. And when Dr. Martin Luther King came on the scene as pastor of Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, the minds of the people had already been stirred up by Johns. And so, you see, I can see the difference because I know how I was treated in Alabama when I was going to college. And Miami was a little different. Miami had a little different taste in the atmosphere. It wasn't as hard as it was, let's say, in Alabama. Because I remember coming home on the train one night, and the train was late, and it was so cold in Alabama. We were in Birmingham, and they would not let us in the train station. We were on the outside. And by the time the train got to Birmingham, my feet was almost frozen. I had no feelings in it, you know? So, and they didn't care. They did not care. So, you know, I understand. So coming to Miami was, although we did have problems too that needed to be dealt with, I don't think they were as severe as some of the other places.
when you think about Dr. King's legacy and all the things that he accomplished, why isn't more of his time in Miami talked about?
Well, maybe because they don't know. That could be one of the reasons. I'm not quite sure. I can't put a definite answer to that question, but I think that lack of knowledge as to exactly what happened and how he did help with the desegregation of Miami might not be as known, because it didn't cause as much notoriety as it did in other places. And because the whites and the blacks got together and settled so many things that he did accomplish, that it didn't get the publicity.
And that was Dr. Enid Pinckney, the president and CEO of the Hampton House. Again, the Hampton House will be celebrating Dr. King's legacy with live music and conversations between 1 and 5 o'clock today. You can read more about the historic Hampton House and Dr. King's time in Miami by going to our website, WLRN.org. And you're hearing music from the local ensemble Seraphic Fire. Their concert series, I Have a Dream, music from the African-American tradition, kicks off in Miami Beach on Wednesday with shows in Boca Raton, Coral Gables, Fort Lauderdale, and Cutler Bay to come. We'll have more details on our website. Still to come, the Sundial team heads to the Homestead Rodeo. That's coming up next.